Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Dave McKay, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you today?
I'm very well. Yourself?
I'm great. I'm excited to be on the air.
Yeah,
you know,
me too.
It's always an opportunity for me because it really requires me to show up.
Yeah, it really does. I'm noticing the same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just like everything that we offer, you know, I mean, in a way we could say that's why we do what we do. It's because it requires us to show up.
Yes.
You know, that's really the only reason we're doing it.
Yes. Yeah. Makes sense to me. And one of the things that requires us to show up in a big way would be the deepening practice retreat.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's for sure. And so I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what the deepening practice retreat is.
Yeah, sure. It's a month-long retreat that we do here. We're getting ready to start our third, I believe, on August 1st. So we've done two previously. It started, I don't know, a couple years ago, I guess, when we realized, you know, for a long time here at the monastery, there's been an opportunity for people to come and do, we call them extended stays. It's like a training period that people could do for varying lengths that for people who weren't ready to make like a full-time forever sort of a commitment like some of us have. And, you know, so people have sort of come and gone and done that. And what we realized is we just don't have the resources to do that. It takes a lot of attention and a lot of energy to train somebody monastically.
Yes.
And what we realized that we need to do was get everyone who had that interest, and there are quite a number of people who have that interest, and kind of get them all together here at the same time, and then we can do it all at one time. And that way we can pick a time where we can, where that's our focus, and we can devote all our attention to it. And also that people who have kind of a similar desire can support each other as they go through it.
Yes. Yes. Great. So before, there was a period where people could do extended stays, and it sounds like they would come sort of whenever they wanted almost.
Yeah.
And the monastery would adjust to support them.
Right.
And that takes up a lot of resources
mm-hmm.
for the monastery. And so what you realized is that having these people all together at the same time, and that the monastery could devote their resources to supporting people in that way, was really helpful.
Yeah, and it works out a lot better. You know, this from having spent time here, but this is kind of a tough place to be. You know, when people come on retreat, it's even a tough place to be on retreat, but not so much because there's a lot of other people around. There's groups frequently, you know, usually twice, sometimes three times a day. So there's a lot of stimulation, a lot of interaction. There's a lot of support happening.
Yes.
You know, in the old days when somebody would just come to do an extended stay, it was just them on their own, basically, in the silence, dealing with this immense conditioning that would come up in response to being here.
Yeah.
With just, you know, a couple groups a week or two or three groups a week and maybe, you know, guidance every other day.
Yeah.
And it's just really, really, really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
But to pull people together, like I think we're still working that a little bit, but I think we're going to have 8, maybe 10, somewhere between there, people coming for this next deepening practice starting on in August. You know, they all get to be here together doing it. And there's something really wonderful and fun and magic about that.
Yes. Yeah, as you were talking about that, I got a real sense of a real Sangha experience and the support that comes from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. And in this particular case, it's going to be, well, actually, this has been the case on the others also to some degree, but there's going to be two other retreats happening during the month while these folks are here.
Uh-huh.
So not only will they, and one of them they'll be participating in, and one of them they'll be serving for, basically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it gives people, you know, they'll be here, doing their program, which is essentially, you know, we're training them how to be monks, basically.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, you know, there'd be other people coming in and out having their own experiences, and they get to contribute to that.
Yes.
You know, normally that's not the case. Normally you come here on retreat and you essentially, I mean, you might do a little working meditation or something, but you essentially just receive from what we offer here.
Yeah.
But these folks will have the opportunity to come, receive, and give at the same time, which is, that's part of what makes it so powerful, I think.
Yes, yes, yes. That sounds really wonderful, just the way you described it. And a couple words come up for me. One is projection. When I'm on retreat, I often project tremendous amount of willingness and courage onto the other people who are there and what they're looking at. And the other word that comes up for me is participation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, we can inspire each other. You know, that's why the Buddha said you can't do this alone. You know, you need to do it in Sangha. And you need to have the support because, you know, we're as much each other's kind of pains in the neck as we are each other's inspirations. But, you know, both of those things support each other in a way, you know, especially bringing in the projection element.
Uh-huh. Can you say a little bit more about that? Well, I was just thinking about how they both support us in terms of projection.
Well, we're all, the environment here, as you know, is set up to help us pay attention and see what's going on, basically.
Yes.
That's kind of the bottom line. Well, like you said earlier, to begin the show, you know, it requires us to show up.
Yes.
And some of the things that require us to show up are the example of people who are doing really inspiring deep practice, which
yes.
is often the case here.
Yes.
You often see that here.
Yes.
Another thing that requires us to show up is the person who, you know, left something in our way or didn't do what they were supposed to do, it seems
uh-huh.
like, or it's, you know, is not kind of following the program we feel like they need to.
Yes.
You know, those kind of things are just as much opportunities because they require us to show up. It's kind of from the opposite side of it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's really fascinating. And if from the perspective of projection, I can bring those inspiring parts, trace and that courage, and trace that back to myself, and I can also trace back the other side as well.
Uh huh. Yeah.
The one who doesn't want to follow the program, is not interested in participating, doesn't like how things are going.
Yep, absolutely. And the thing that's neat about doing it as a group, rather than just basically kind of duking it out with conditioned mind and solitude, is that you know everyone's going through that exact same thing. You know, everyone, you know. Ups, big ups, seeing things, excited, inspired, love practice, you know, down in the dumps, can't stand this, I hate this, everybody's out to get me, what am I doing here, you
yeah.
know. And so everybody's going through that. And then we get together and we talk about that. And that's what happens in our group discussions. And then, you know, you get to kind of see it. You know, it's easier to see in someone else, of course, than in ourselves.
Yeah.
You get to kind of see it happening in someone else. And then it's a mirror. Each person here is a mirror for everyone else, and so we kind of get to see how we do that in the other person and then, you know, benefit in that way from each other's practice.
Yes, yes. It's really so exciting. And what came up for me as you were talking is that the privileged environment enables us to see that and not interfere with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We see that inspiration and the courage. We see, you know, what we project as someone identified or in a difficult place. And within that privileged environment, I get to take all of that in for myself and see what I see about that.
Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, the particular flavor that takes for the deepening practice retreat, unlike anything else we do, really, is that you know, like people might come here for a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and there's a really sort of specific set of information that we give to people during that retreat and then work with them as they practice, you know, with that information. The information that people get with the deepening practice training is essentially kind of what's most basic to training here at the monastery. So we look at things like not making assumptions,
uh-huh.
not having better ideas, not seeking better accommodation. You know, some of these sort of the pillars of practice here, you know, the things that the monks who live here are working with all the time that, you know, are sort of keeping in our awareness what we're doing, what we're practicing here, and helping us see, you know, where we've strayed off in one place or another.
Yes, yes. That seems really essential, those pillars that you just mentioned, not making assumptions, not coming up with better ideas, and not seeking better accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, like,
I'm quite familiar with all of those in myself.
Uh-huh, for sure.
And with practice, I have the opportunity to see them in a way that they were not visible to me before.
Yeah, that's really true. And what happens as we go along and practice those sorts of things, in a way we could say we learn to serve. You know, we learn to become part of something that's larger than just this one person.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, letting go of my better ideas, letting go of my things that seem like I need that are different from everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, letting go of just the different kind of beliefs and assumptions that I have. You know, as those kind of things fall away, you know, that's what keeps us separate from everybody.
Uh-huh.
And so, and that's, you know, over the, for the deepening practice training, you know, people are here for a month practicing this. And so over the course of the month, you know, letting go of all this stuff, letting go of conditioning, being here, participating, like you were talking about before, there's a real neat thing happen where it becomes, we become one thing, sort of.
Uh-huh.
We become one being, in a way, all with all these different, you know, arms and legs everywhere, but all of us are sort of one thing. And to me, at least, that's kind of what we're going for in practice, is seeing if we can live life from that place. You know, and essentially, you know, that's the place of service. That's the place where, you know, we really can make a difference for ourselves and for other people.
That's very inspiring, the way you describe that, all being one thing, all working together. Dave, thanks for that inspiring story about the deepening practice retreat.
You're quite welcome. One thing I should mention, just so that we don't, you know, get inundated with applications tomorrow, there are some prerequisites for this. You know, as you can probably imagine from what we're saying, it's set up for people who have a really sincere, committed practice and who have been involved with a practice for a while. And so it's not possible to just kind of jump in and do it.
Yeah.
We require that people sign up, attend a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat first, and also a retreat with Sherry in some form, particularly if it has working meditation. That way people, and usually people do a lot more than that before they come, but that way, you know, everyone... We know that the people who are here are already grounded in the basic tools of the practice, have a lot of experience with it, kind of know the kind of things that are going to come up and are willing to face those kinds of things. Because all that's required, you know, it's not so much required to come for, you know, 2 or 3 days, but to come for a month, you know, you got to be pretty sure that you're up to the task of all of the resistance that's going to come up from conditioned mind.
Yes, a lot of resistance that will come up from conditioned mind. And that's really helpful, and I think the way that you've described it on the web is really helpful as well. It's sort of along those lines. I can't remember the exact wording, but a level of mental, physical, and spiritual challenge that we are unlikely to face, you know, given the choice.
Yeah, that's right. It's funny, I was writing an email today to someone who's considering a long commitment, you know, after the deepening practice training, and that's when it's possible to begin talking about, you know, maybe staying here outside of a structured situation like that. And that's what I found myself writing. It's just, you know, this is tough. I mean, to make a extended commitment at the monastery, you know, it's going to bring up all your worst stuff. It's going to bring up everything that you've ever been afraid of. It's going to take you to places of anger and frustration and despair and loneliness that you've never probably even imagined were there. It doesn't support conditioning, and this environment and this practice so guides us to that place of oneness that we were just talking about. You know, conditioning, once conditioning sort of gets what we've done by coming here, then it's just, you know, it's going to hit us with everything it's got.
Wow.
Not to say it's a bad idea. I said it's not to say it's a bad idea. It's a really good idea. It's just, you know, it's good to have a sort of a process leading up to being here in that way, like we've got set up now. I feel really good about it. It feels really supportive.
That's the way you talked about it. People who have a committed, extended practice. Dave, we have some callers lined up here.
Okay, great. Let's go on.
Great. Okay, first caller, you are now on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? Caller, are you there? Okay, looks like we lost them. Dave, let's try the next one. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Beringia from California.
Hey, Beringia.
Hello there, Dave.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. And actually, I could complain, but I won't.
Yeah, always a good
yeah. And the reason I'm calling is that I've been doing the Reflective Listening Buddies. And I realized that weekly I was making this commitment to doing this Reflective Listening call, and I thought, you know, I'd like to do the same kind of commitment with calling into the radio show.
Oh, good for you.
So I made the commitment, I guess, a couple weeks ago that I was going to call in today. So that's just showing up. You were talking about showing up, and boy, there was a lot of resistance, but I made it.
I bet. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
You know, conditioning hates that kind of thing. You know,
yes.
It hates us making commitment because, you know, you're making a commitment to something very different from it.
Right. Yeah, I've realized that ego doesn't like to be told what to do. And
mm-hmm.
I really, really resist it from the outside. And then I even more resist it when that sort of desire to do something comes from inside of me. Like, I'm going to do something for me. There's a resistance.
Oh.
And it's stronger than when someone says to me, oh, you need to do this. Yeah. But I don't like to be told what to do.
Yeah. Well, I like the way that you changed your language there a minute ago, saying ego doesn't like to be
right.
told what to do. Right, because that's what's really going on. I mean, you don't mind being told what to do if it's coming from a kind place, probably. You definitely don't mind your heart speaking, I wouldn't imagine.
Right.
And, you know, kind of like making commitment to call on the radio show. But, ooh, boy, egocentric karmic conditioning is not interested in anything other than its own agenda.
Right. And I guess what I've realized is that agenda seems to be whatever it seems to be interested in at the moment. So it can be who knows what that agenda is, because sometimes it might be, okay, I'll call into the radio show if somehow it's aligned with whatever it is that I had originally planned. It doesn't happen often, but I'll notice sometimes I don't have the same resistance
right.
to what's going on.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about that is, you know, essentially ego is only interested in one thing. It's only interested in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now it can use, this is what you're saying, it can use any content in life to reflect itself, even something like calling into the radio show. Although I bet you know, it says, hey, you know, something like, you know, you ought to call into the radio show. That would make you a really good person.
Right, right. Or look what good practice I have. I'm calling into the radio show.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
But then you know, because that's you know, ego's involved in that. Ego is attempting to serve itself in that. In some way, it's going to turn it into something that reinforces itself. Like, you know, you say, okay, well, then I will call. You know, it'll hit you with resistance and tell you why it's a bad idea, and nobody will enjoy what you have to say, and you didn't have anything to say anyway, and why'd you even have that thought? Or it'll let you do it, and then as soon as you're done, it'll beat you up for everything you said.
Yeah.
You know, just in
so
some way,
true.
It's got to take it and turn it into itself, you know, because that's what it does. It's kind of like a machine, you know. It just, over and over, it just cranks out me, and suffering and all the ways that happens.
Mm. I've been watching, I think it's, well, I realize, you know, the processes all seem related, but
mm-hmm.
I've been noticing I'm home for the summer and I don't have any work out in the world I have to do. I have lots of things I need to do and lots of projects I'd like to do, but no real pressing deadlines.
Uh-huh.
And I can just waste an entire day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have a task in mind and I don't ever get it done. I don't ever get it started. So one day I decided I was packing up some boxes that I was sending somewhere and that I wanted to do that and I wanted to clean the refrigerator. So I brought in my little sticky notes, and I started process mapping what was going on, sticking them all over the tile in the kitchen.
Oh, wow, that's great.
It was really helpful because what I realized is if I start on a task, I'm going to clean the refrigerator. This is a task I have set aside of me. I'm going to do this. So I start cleaning the refrigerator. Then all of a sudden, there's a thought. Oh, what about the medical bill you need to pay?
Mm-hmm.
And there is such a need to do that that – if I'm not paying attention, I'll go start working on that.
Uh-huh. With what result? You process mapped, you probably got a good sense of what conditioning is up to with that. Why would conditioning be interested in you going from one task to another like that?
Because I never get anything done. Because then what happens at the end of the day is I get beat up for not doing anything.
Yeah, that's what I was suspecting. It's a
mm-hmm.
self-hate trap.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you just said, I'm going to clean the refrigerator and clean the refrigerator, there really wouldn't be anything to feel bad about.
Right, but yes.
As a matter of fact,
yeah.
There'd probably be a lot of good things to feel good about. It's like, hey, look what I did. Look how clean the refrigerator is. You know, an enjoyment of that. I just cleaned my hermitage the other day and had that feeling. It's like, ah.
Yeah.
But, you know, enjoyment, pleasure, that kind of pleasure, feeling good about oneself, you know, it just doesn't support ego. So, you know, we need to create some kind of little self-hate trap here that will get her out of this this plan and just kind of turn it into its opposite, you know, turn it into something to feel bad about and get beat up over.
And that's exactly what happens. And what was interesting that day is that it took me all day. But I process mapped the whole time, and I watched. There was one time even where I'm walking down the hall carrying a mayonnaise jar to get stamped. I mean, it was like even I went even to that sort of sleep. I mean, the unawareness, even though I was watching. But
I missed a word there. You're walking down the hallway with a mayonnaise jar, and what happened?
There was like I needed to get stamps. I needed to make sure I had stamps.
Stamps.
Right. And
yeah.
It was just that, and I realized as I was process mapping, I cannot believe it's one thing after another, and it comes with I should have, I need to. But that day, it took me all day. I did get the refrigerator cleaned. I did get the packages mailed. And I did. I felt really, really good about it.
Uh-huh.
But there was that sort of then the result of, well, the only thing you did was clean the refrigerator and mail two boxes.
Yeah, but you didn't buy it, I bet you.
I didn't. No,
yeah,
I really didn't.
Because what's so different about, I just love that story. You know, what's so different about that and what usually happens is, you know, you're really present to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your process, you know, it can't say anything without you noticing it, because that's, you know, you've got two parallel assignments. You're cleaning the refrigerator, but you're also watching what conditioned mind is doing.
Right.
That's not supposed to be going on at all. You know, I mean, you're supposed to just be off asleep, have no idea that it's doing anything to you, and then just get being manipulated by these voices, you know, telling you to, you know, don't do that, go do that. Well, don't do that, go do that. You know, sort of steering you around, basically setting you up for the beating that's coming later.
Mm.
Now, the really fun part about it is, conditioning really is like a machine. You know, it doesn't have any intelligence, really. There's a stimulus and there's a response. You know, it can crank out the same sort of stuff over and over again, but it doesn't have the intelligence that you have.
Mm.
So, you know, in this case, if it had intelligence, the intelligent thing to do would be to shut up as soon as you started process mapping.
Right.
Because
it didn't.
You know, it didn't. No, because it can't.
No.
It doesn't know how to. It can't let you go. You know, it can't let you just wander off into a world where there's nothing to feel bad about and where you accomplish things and feel good about yourself. It just can't do it. It has to do what it knows to do. And that, to me, that's one of the best things we've got going for us as, you know, students of awareness, that we can set up an environment like that. You know, the process mapping kind of miracle that happened in your house is one form of it. You know, we could say that the whole privileged environment that happens at the monastery is another. You know, we can set it up so that it's not like it's not going to do what it does. In a way, we don't even want it to not do what it does. You know, we want it to do what it does in an environment where we can see it doing what it does, which I think is exactly what happened for you.
Yeah, it's really true, because if it had somehow stopped doing what it normally did, I wouldn't have seen the process that keeps me stuck not doing anything.
Exactly.
So.
Yep. And that actually, I mean, this is a hard sell, I'll admit, you know, but that's actually better, at least from this point of view, than like having like a blissful day, you know, a
mm-hmm.
day where there's no conditioning, because, you know, you're engaged with it. You discovered in this, I'm projecting, that there's a way that you can be more powerful than conditioning.
Right, right. I had the feeling when I finally got the packages, the refrigerator clean, I got the packages to the post office. It was sort of like that David and Goliath feeling.
Uh-huh.
But somehow, it was like, aha, aha,
yep.
I did what I was going to do today. And
uh-huh.
I saw what normally stops it. So, yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if what you'll, what I would recommend that you take away from this is the one, you know, you've got a lot of stuff in your life to do, like cleaning the refrigerator. But the one thing you need to do every day, and this isn't like a need to do in a should kind of way that you can get beat up over, but there's one thing that you need to do, and it's the same thing you did that day, which is to really pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, because
yeah.
because that's really, you know, it's like that's our work. We can be cleaning the refrigerator at the same time. You know, it's not like it doesn't take any space physically, but that's the work. That's what provides that wonderful feeling of, you know, hey, I'm here. I'm a person. I'm not this little pawn
right.
being driven around by conditioning all the time. I'm a somebody. You know, I matter. I have feelings. I have hopes, I have desires, I have dreams, you know, and I want to be able to experience all those things. You know, that's what gets us there. It's just paying attention to conditioned mind, seeing how it works, just like you did. And then, you know, you've seen it, how it does, how it did what it did, and in a way that can never be taken away from you.
And as I hear you say that, I think about that day, I remember it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not, it wasn't just a day that sort of slips into the past. It's a day, like I remember putting the tape on the boxes still, and I remember wiping the muck out of the vegetable crisper. I mean, I remember that because I was there for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say too. That's because you were present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that somehow the process mapping with the stickies helps me stay present.
It does. Yeah.
Well,
that's why we do it. And you know, for people who don't
mm-hmm.
know what you're referring to, process mapping is just a matter of, you know, you take what the voices are saying, you're paying attention to what the voices are saying in your mind, and instead of believing them and just going on like what normally happens, you're writing them down. It's like kind of like a reporter. You know, you're taking notes. And so you're getting them all out there where you can see them. I mean, you were sticking them on the floor, it sounds like. So there you are. You know, you've got the mayonnaise jars. You've got the ketchup. You've got all the old lettuce or whatever you're sorting out. And then there's all the sticky notes. I can just imagine it. You know,
and it sort of,
because you have that intention to be aware and see what's going on with the voices, because you need to in order to be able to write them down.
Right.
That's what's happening. You're paying attention and you're attending to the voices. And so it's like everything, it like creates this this little space of awareness that everything arises inside of so it can be seen instead of just believed and you know, used against us.
And there was, I had found these sticky notes that were hearts.
Oh.
And so, like, shaped like hearts.
Uh-huh.
And it was really neat because it was sort of like all this, because of course there was self-hate and all this sort of thing. Everything was on these pink hearts. All over the floor. It was actually just a wonderful day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that I would like to do more. But of course, I was a resistance to it, which is funny because it's such a great day, right? But oh, I don't need to do it again. I've learned everything I can from that.
Yeah, we know where that's coming from, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, I can easily imagine why it was such a good day because, you know, when we're, the word we use around here, as you know, for what happened with you is that you disidentified.
Right.
You know, you were outside, at least sounds like a lot or primarily over the course of that day, outside of this system that we call conditioned mind that causes us to suffer all the time. And the little miracle that happens right there is that, you know, when we're in it, we're basically abused. That's
mm-hmm.
essentially what's going on. We're being abused by. And, you know, it's kind of creepy when you think about it this way, but it does seem to be the way that it is. You know, we're being abused by this invisible thing, whatever it might be, that hates us, that lives in our minds. Like, you know, we're just going around being punished all the time and live in a world where there's always something wrong with us and we can never measure up and we can never have what we want because we don't deserve it. But when we disidentify from that system in the way that it sounds like you did and step out of it, the miracle that happens is we get to see the person inside of that,
mm-hmm.
who's living in that world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we get to see that person and experience that person. We might even say sort of hold that person, you know, with acceptance and love and, you know, all the kind of things that we're looking for instead of, you know, normally they're being held in that abuse.
There was a thought that I had when I had all the sticky notes out, and I just had, and it was really, it was compassion. I thought to myself, oh, Beringia, no wonder you can't get anything done.
Uh-huh.
It was just like, this is compassion. No wonder it's so hard to do something.
Uh-huh.
Because
yep.
if I had a little person in my house and I was saying, oh, okay, go clean your refrigerator. Oh, no, 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 no. Now you need to go pay the bills. Oh, no, no, no. Go back and do dishes. I mean, how cruel would that be?
Yeah, yeah. Especially when at the end of the day you add, well, you're such a loser. You didn't get anything done.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like there's a clarity that comes with that disidentification.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can actually see what's going on. And then, like you say, you know, you don't have to, let's see how to say it. That person doesn't have to be abused anymore. You know?
Right, there's another way, yes.
There is another way. Yeah, it actually is possible to live in a world of unconditional love and acceptance. It really is. And the beautiful thing about it is there's a way we can practice that. And that's what you're talking about. You know, there's a way that we can support ourselves in making that movement and practice that movement and actually get there.
It's a beautiful thing. I am very grateful for the practice.
It is. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And thank you, too, Dave, for being here. You too, Michael.
Yeah.
Well,
you're
thanks.
Very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling in, Berinja.
Okay. Have a good evening. Bye.
Okay, you too.
Thanks for joining us, Berinja. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight I'm excited that we have Dave McKay here with us. Dave's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice. Because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, I always find myself kind of bouncing along when I listen to these sponsor ads.
I do too. I love that.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of blues since I was teeny tiny. And
Oh, yeah.
Really, really fun to hear that ad.
Yes, great. Dave, we have three more callers here.
Okay. Hey, before we go on next caller, can I throw something in real quick?
Yes, please.
I just wanted to mention that Sherry was hoping to be on the call today.
Yes.
I think probably a lot of people know that she's in Africa right now.
Yes.
And I want to tell people that they have been typing away over there, apparently, and the first blogs are up.
Yes. Yes.
Am I right about that, Michael? I actually haven't seen them myself, but that's the
rumor. That is correct. That is correct. I've seen them. I believe an email went out today with a link to that first blog that's up there.
Great. And I guess if people didn't get the email, they could go on the website and find it.
Yes. Yes, under the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Okay, good. And they're there for quite a long time, two more Tuesdays, I believe. And so, you know, it's really hard to find a landline, basically,
yes.
In Zambia, especially one that works in the middle of the night. And so I don't know what kind of difficulty they ran into, but I bet that was it. But I know Sherry loves to call in to the radio.
Yes.
So I bet you they'll be they'll be working on that over the next couple of weeks.
Yes, that'll be fun if they could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that you mentioned the website, and that reminds me also, Dave. There's a message on the website from Sherry with details about the process mapping that Berinja talked about.
Oh, that's true. I had forgotten that.
Can I give a little navigation for people to how to get
sure.
there?
Yeah, no
okay,
problem.
Okay, great. So if people go to livingcompassion.org, which is our website. On the left-hand side menu on every page, there's a section called From Sherry Huber. And there are a lot of messages from Sherry there. And if you scroll down to June 2006, and that's June 2006, Sherry gives a step-by-step there, actually 8 steps, and a lot of great discussion about how to go about process mapping.
Oh, great. That's really helpful. And process mapping, as people probably, you know, became aware, at least during that conversation, is a big tool that we use. We're actually cooking up a workshop down in L.A. For the early fall. We haven't settled on a date yet. It's going to be a process mapping workshop. So if you live down in that area, you could stay tuned, too.
Yes, yes. And in my experience, one of the big values of process mapping is that it makes stuff visible.
Mm-hmm.
Takes it out of my head and really slows it down.
It really does. Yeah, well, this is an awareness practice, and that's what it all comes down to. It helps us, you know, with process mapping in a real physical way. You know, you write it down in a sticky, you stick it on the paper, or in Brindy's case, you know, right there on the floor, and it's, you've got, you know, 3 feet of distance from it.
Yes.
You can see it. And so, you know, it's really fun. You know, we got lots of stories of people who, you know, do process maps and, you know, put them on the wall of their bedroom and or in different places like that. And, you know, you, if you leave it up there all the time and pay attention to it, you know, you can catch yourself in different places on your map.
Yes.
You know, so you just, you know, exploded and, you know, yelled at your partner or whatever. And then you look up and you realize, aha, that's where I am. And I can see how I got here and I can see where I'm going.
Yes. Yes. Very exciting. Thanks, Dave. Okay, you ready for the next caller?
Sure.
Next caller, you're on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm well. You?
I'm well. I'm something's going on. I'm realizing that I'm very caught up in fear. The particular content now is my job. I'm afraid that I could lose the job. There have been layoffs where I work, and you know, the economy,
mm-hmm.
being what it is, and I'm seeing how it's really I'm really suffering, and I'm really living really small.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of withdrawing, and there's a conversation at work often about what's happening with the company and what's happening with the economy, and
everybody's sort of collaborating on the fear.
Yeah, and I'm falling into some patterns I have of that don't help. And anyway, it's just fear just has me in its grip, and I can't seem to shake it.
Well, the question that seems most relevant to me is, do you have a sense of how that fear is being produced in your mind?
How it's being produced?
Yeah, how it's being produced. I can clarify that a little bit if you want. You know, it's not about, obviously, you know, it's not about the job, really.
Okay.
Right?
Well, it's got to be conditioning if it's fear.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. It's conditioning using the job. You know, that just happens to be the content, right?
Okay, yeah.
So if you know, what conditioning will want to do, and it sounds like it's being somewhat successful at, is talk to you about the job, divert all your attention to that content, get you kind of thinking about it and worrying about it and stuff, and then, you know, there you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm going right along with it.
Right. Yeah. And
it
so if,
like,
if you
yeah.
pull your attention back from the content of it. And look at the process. You know, this is, of course, a big distinction that we make in the practice is the difference between content and process. You know, if conditioning can keep you focused on the content, which in this case is the job, and keep you your attention away from the process, which is how it's doing to you, what it's doing to you, then it can make you suffer for as much as it wants to, for as long as it wants to.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you figure,
just at least hypothetically for a few moments, that it's not really about the job. And you look at, well, how is this fear being produced? You know, what is conditioning actually doing to make it happen? You got a got a sense of it?
Yeah, so this is where process mapping could come in.
That's the same thing I was thinking.
Okay. Is there, am I supposed to feel better? In other words, if I'm not feeling okay, it's conditioning. Is that right? Or, like, are worry and fear always things that are conditioning? And so if I'm in that, that's a signal. If it's your sign, okay.
I think I can give you an unconditional guarantee on that one.
Okay.
Now, one thing about it is there's no supposed to, though. You know, there's no.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean it. Yeah, like I should.
Mean
I meant. Yeah, I meant like I want to feel better. I want to stop feeling this way, and I feel like that's sort of making it worse sometimes. So I know I'm in fear. I'm anxious. I'm having physical symptoms of anxiety, and I want that to stop. And so then I get into a battle with it, kind of thing.
Yeah, because that's just as much as the worry and fear is conditioning. I want to not be having this experience as conditioning too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you're saying, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, there's this. We kind of alluded to it a minute ago when we were talking with Beringia. You know, there's this place that where. See how to say it. It's not like your experience changes in the sense that the worry and fear is gone. You feel however you want to feel, and that's you know, so that's one possibility, and that whole thing is conditioning. There's this other possibility that we're alluding to a little while ago, where it's not so much that the worry and fear are gone. As a matter of fact, they're just as much there as they ever were.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that your relationship with those things has, in a really subtle but profound way, shifted.
Mm.
And I know you've had this experience because I've talked to you lots of times before about it, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a difference between, in the way we were talking about it a few moments ago, between being identified with that worry and fear, where you feel like it's real,
mm-hmm.
it always has been real.
Yeah, yeah.
There's really no way out of it. And being
mm-hmm.
disidentified, it's not like it needs to go away or even be changed at all. It's just suddenly you're not believing it. You know, you're outside of it with that clarity that Brinji was talking about a little while ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You remember that experience, at least hypothetically?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, absolutely. I don't necessarily remember it with fear, but I do remember with other.
Oh, okay, good. You remember
other things that have coming up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we might speculate that for some reason, in this case, there's something coming up for you. There's something arising inside of you that, at least up until this point, is bigger than your capacity for love and compassion for that thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the past, that's happened, I think, with a lot of other things also. And
mm-hmm.
as you've practiced, your capacity for embracing those things has grown.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you've become
mm-hmm.
a larger person. Your heart's gotten bigger. You know, that which is acceptable to you now is larger and more than what was acceptable to you, you know, like when you started practice, even probably a long time after you began practice.
Right. Yes.
And so now here you are with the next opportunity. You know, so
mm-hmm.
the next level of what needs to be accepted, embraced, and let go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, that's interesting because something just shifted to where, gee, this can be exciting.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh.
Do you think
you disidentified just there?
Yeah, I think I did. And I think also, you know, what's kind of coming up is if I can embrace this, if I can accept this and change my relationship with it, then the next time next content that comes up, it causes fear, I will have a different relationship with it.
Yes, you definitely have that potential because you'll be practicing what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like this is to me is one of the best things about this practice is that it really is a skill that we can develop. You know, the skill is not relevant to any content at all. It's not even relevant to something like fear and worry. You know, it's the skill of being able
mm-hmm.
to accept what is unacceptable to us, we might say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to love what
mm-hmm.
seems unlovable or impossible to us. You know, we can practice that, and usually, you know, we start off with little bitty things because we need to start off with little bitty things because we're learning a skill. You know, it's like when you're going to take up running, you know, start off with 5 minutes. You know, you don't start off with 15 miles. But then over
right.
time, you know, the skill develops and you get to where you sort of, it's not an intellectual understanding, but it's like you get it. You know, you get how, first of all, you get that that's even a possibility, which is brand new information, you know, when we begin practice. that we actually can disidentify and have a completely different experience of what's going on without anything changing at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's radical just right there in itself. But then once we recognize that and we experience, we see how we have the capacity to accept what arises in the way that we're talking about in love and compassion, and that we watch ourselves grow and watch our hearts grow larger and be able to bring in things that traditionally have been more and more difficult for us, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can begin to have faith in that ability. And then, like you say, it becomes exciting because, you know, well, here's the next thing that's coming around the bend.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a, you know, condition would say, well, that's a bad thing. We don't want something that's going to make us feel bad. You know, the heart says, oh, boy, you know, here's another,
yeah.
We're going to grow through this one.
Yeah. One of the ways I've been trying to deal with this fear is to try to get some financial security really fast. Which, I mean, you know, it's like, well, I can't really fast, but I mean, you know, talk to an advisor and plan this and plan that. And I'm realizing that even if I were able to get to a point where the fear stopped, there's going to be something else that makes me afraid. I mean, you know what I mean?
Oh,
something,
yeah,
down the road. So
when you're in those kind of essentially coping behaviors, you're not actually taking care of what's going on, right? That's kind of
like
putting a Band-Aid on it. You're not,
right.
You're not going to, you know, where's the hurt here? What's actually going on? You know, what we were talking about just a minute ago, that goes right to the heart of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
being present, you know, mm-hmm. stepping back from the voices. You know, when I asked you a little while ago, how does this happen? Well, you know, the most basic way that it happens is, you know, the voices are talking to you. They're scaring you.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
you're really paying attention to that. How is that happening? And as you see how it's happening, you know, you'll be able more and more to step back and take care of, you know, that part of you in the middle of all of it who really believes it's true and is really scared because of all the stories that are being told.
Mm-hmm. I think I've forgotten all about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. When we're identified, we do. We become her. That's why we forget about her.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
In my case, him. You know, we get identified inside of it in that little, you talked about getting smaller earlier, in that little bitty world that person lives in, so tiny, you know, so full of hurt and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see what's going on. We disidentify. We step back in this really big place that's full of love for that person. And there's the difference between heaven and hell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for calling
that
in.
That was very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we're joined by Dave McKay, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Thanks for being here tonight, Dave.
Oh, you're quite welcome. My pleasure.
Dave, let me give out the phone number here, and then we're going to go to a sponsor ad. If you'd like to call in today, the number is toll-free in North America, 888-4-SANGHA. And if you spell that out with the digits, it's 888-472-6444. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Okay, good.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Tonight we have Dave McKay. Dave is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we have another caller here.
Super.
Next caller, you are on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Phil from the Palo Alto Zen Center calling.
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good. Fun to hear your voice.
Good. Yeah. Just thought I'd call in today. Today's assignment and quote, okay? Are you there?
I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you, Phil.
Yeah. Should I talk louder? Would that work?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, kind of. I have to talk real loud. Okay, I was looking at the assignment to, you know, in the Transform Your Life.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I'll read the quote because it's really good.
Okay, super.
It says, "To say yes, you have to sweat and roll up your sleeves and plunge both hands into life up to the elbows. It is easy to say no, even if saying no means death." And then the person that wrote this was Jean, A-N-O-U-I-L-H. I don't know how to say that last name. Anyhow, the assignment today. Not to be do. And around it was the whole thing of, you know, no being resistance, and had anything about that.
Well, to be honest, Phil, I'm only getting about every fifth or sixth word you're saying. Michael, can you hear Phil okay?
No, I'm not getting a good connection either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This way. Hang on. All right. Is this any better?
So far it is.
I can't hear you very well now, but yeah. So it is better?
Yeah, I can hear you good now.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry. You'll have to back up just a little bit.
Yeah, all right. Should I read the quote again?
No, I got that. Got the quote.
I got that.
Yep.
And did you get the assignment? All right. Look at those moments in which you can trade no for yes.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. And so I was looking at that, you know, and thought, you know, that's a fantastic assignment. What I was looking at around it was how the no, at least in my life, are all the little resistances.
Mm-hmm.
And now the yes are the acceptance,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just moment by moment. You know, it's kind of like with each breath, it can be a yes or a no.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just looking at that and was wondering if you had anything maybe you could look at around that, we could.
Well, that sure is my experience. You know, I mean, if you know what kind of what I'm drawing from what you're saying is, you haven't actually said this, but I'm projecting it that you really enjoy yes. You know, you
mm-hmm.
said the no is you know, it's kind of the little resistances that happen, but you really enjoy the process of you know, seeing where the no's are and turning them into yeses.
Yeah, it's like the no's are kind of a tug, you know, kind of a pull that doesn't feel good. And sometimes when, you know, I'm presented with something, the first thing that will go through is the tug for a no.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can feel that tug. And so actually, in my life at this point, that tug means to say yes.
You've trained yourself to do that.
I've trained myself, I think, I'm sure for all the years at the monastery.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
The answer was yes, yes or goodbye. So
Very often says that, yes or goodbye. It's true, though. I mean, and that's what the training is all about, right? Because, you know, no is the automatic default reaction to life. Like you say, you know, anytime anything's presented, no. You know, because if we'll go with that, then we're safely off in conditioned land, and then, you know, we're resisting everything, and conditioning has access to us in a way through that no.
Yeah. And it's just that, and when I saw it, is that how with the no, our life gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And with the yes, it gets larger and bigger and more expanded.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time that, you know, I feel that tug of a no, basically, I guess it's because it's, you know, conditioning's right there. It's almost a helpful reminder to say yes.
Yeah, it really is. Well, if we can train ourselves to use it that way, as you obviously have, because, you know, that's not what's supposed to happen.
Right.
You know, the no condition says no, and we basically say yes. You're right to the no.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Oh,
and,
condition says no. We say, oh, you're right, and then we're kind of off and running into conditioning.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, the whole first part of my life was that way. It was, I would actually, the fear would rise, and I would say no, and I would notice too that most of the time, eventually, I would do whatever it was. Not always, but most of the time. So if somebody asked me something and I'd say, oh, no, and then I would look at it and think about it and think maybe I could do it, you know, like that. And so then I might, depending on what it was, but most of the time probably go ahead and do it. But what I realize now is it's so much easier and better for all concerned to say yes
mm-hmm.
right off the bat.
Yeah, it really
you
is.
Know.
But boy, you have to be present, don't you, to be able to.
Yeah.
Present.
Well, that tug helps me too. But
mm-hmm.
to say yes and then go through all that, if there is any, oh my gosh, you know, kind of thing that comes up, do that all after the yes, kind of silently to myself.
Yeah, it's kind of what you're describing. Kind of like, people will use, for example, they'll get a song stuck in their head,
mm-hmm.
and. You know, and they're trying to get rid of it, trying to make it go away, which, of course, makes it just stay there. But if you can get it that every time that song pops in your head, that's kind of a signal to wake up and be present,
mm-hmm.
you know, then it can become something from something that's really distracting and hard and unhelpful to something that's really helpful. And it sounds like that's a lot what you've done with the no. You know, you recognize that the no is a signal that conditioning's there, and that becomes, when the no's there, then you know the place you need to go is to yes, because you don't want to be in suffering. You want to be in possibility instead.
Right. Yeah. And at this point, once the yes is there, and this I guess took a bit too, but once the yes is there, it's really there. You know, it's not like yes and then oh my gosh. You know, it's really a yes that's actually enjoyable, because
mm-hmm.
all the parts seem to rally around that yes, where at some point in my life they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. It's like when that moment arises, it's like we're standing on kind of like on the apex of a roof or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people often talk about the kind of slippery slope that goes with conditioning, you know.
Right.
So conditioning says no. We say yes to no. And then we left the apex, and we're just sliding as fast as we can go, kind of towards suffering. But
right.
you know, in a really kind of an odd and wonderful way, the same thing happens on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, when we say yes, now it's not, you know, it takes a lot of willingness. It's not so easy of a slide, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not greased up so quite so good. But
mm-hmm.
Once we really say yes, it really is like all of life starts to cooperate, and it gathers a momentum itself in
mm-hmm.
the same way that the conditioning does.
Exactly.
And, like the way the Buddha talked about it, apparently, is, you know, that we have this wheel of karma, and it's rolling in this one direction. It's rolling towards suffering and, you know, everything that goes with suffering. And we need to learn to, stop the wheel. And then if we have the strength and the willingness and the determination, and if we, you know, devote ourselves to practice in the ways that are possible for us, we can actually start to roll that wheel the other way. And as long as we're practicing, you know, there's a momentum that builds with that. And it's like instead of it seeming like all of life is supporting the idea that there's something wrong with me and I'm not enough and, all the suffering that happens, suddenly it seems like all of life is supporting this kind of beautiful thing that's happening where I'm watching my life open up and I'm watching myself grow.
Mhm. Yeah, that's so true, and it's such a wonderful experience. And it does, you know, in the beginning when you're really pushing on that wheel, it does take a lot of willingness.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you think about all the momentum that's behind that wheel.
Exactly.
You know, all the lifetimes of suffering.
Yeah.
You know, all the suffering just in this lifetime.
Right.
You know, all the times that, you know, and it's not something for any of us to feel bad about, but because we were trained how to suffer. You know, we showed up in this life with that capacity. From almost the minute we arrived here, we started to be trained how to do this suffering thing. But, you know, all the ways that we've believed conditioning in our lives, all the ways that force is being reinforced and validated, you know, it just creates this huge momentum. And, you know, to wake up in the middle of that, it's really kind of a miracle that it ever actually even occurs to anybody.
Exactly.
To look for another possibility.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess that it, according to what we hear, it rarely occurs. You know what I mean? We're just really lucky, or you know, that when it does, and then to take really good advantage of it if it occurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to have an experience of that just walking around in the world. I mean, you know, who knows what's really going on with people, because we're just projecting. It's really hard to tell. But boy, you know, sometimes it just seems like people are not there, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's in ways they're sad. You know, you see somebody, this happened to me the other day, you know, a mom was yelling at a little kid in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, gosh. I mean, it's such a painful thing to watch, because, you know, that happened to me. I know the consequences of that. I've also done that.
Right.
You know, and so I know how it feels to be someone in that place who's willing to take what's going on out on somebody else.
Right.
And both of them are such hard, suffering places.
Yes.
And like you say, you know, I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's a lifelong process, at least in my case it is, you know, trying to get past all this stuff, you know, let it all go and really be free. But boy, am I grateful that for whatever reason I had the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is certainly been the biggest blessing in my life, having this opportunity to practice this practice. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that this has been really, it's always good for me even to look at this stuff and to look at it, you know, with other folks. And, you know, here at the Zen Center in Palo Alto, we're just so lucky to have such a wonderful sangha that we can look at these things together, you know.
Yeah, that's really true. As a matter of fact, you know, you've got group tonight, I think, don't you?
We do. We have group tonight. We have some orientation. Some new people are coming.
Oh, wow,
and,
nice.
You know, when people listen to these archives and they want to know what to do, you can go to the website, www.livingcompassion.org, and I think we have to click on the Monastery Peace Center and the Palo Alto Zen Center's under that. It's in that little category, and get all the information on how to come.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and like you say, it's really good to have support. People are talking about that all night, really, but it's good to have people around to practice with.
Oh, it's just great. And I think, you know, that's what it really does help the, it does create an environment for the willingness to even do the thing we started out talking about, you know, looking at the yeses and the noes. And for some reason, you know, there's such a support when we're practicing together that even in little parts of our, you know, extraneous areas of our life, of my life, I've noticed how there's more willingness there ever since I've been practicing with the, you know, the Zen Center, the group, the
yeah, it's almost like the willingness is a shared thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The more people are there with the willingness, it's kind of like we can tap, there's like a pool that gets created that we can tap into.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of like, yeah, everyone in the entire universe that has that willingness, we all probably share that same willingness. So the more people willing, the better we all are off.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Phil. Sure appreciate
it. Well, thank you, Dave. Yeah, it's been nice to talk with you.
Yeah, and have a great group tonight. I know you will.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. All righty. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Phil. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we've been joined by Dave McKay. Dave is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, while Sherry and Jen and the rest of the Africa team are in Zambia. And Dave, as you mentioned earlier in the show, the first of the blogs are starting to show up on the Living Compassion website.
Yeah, that's a really fun way to participate, you know, because you got the pictures are fantastic usually, and so and the writing is really good too. And I know it's just you get to sort of follow them in their journey and kind of get to experience what's going on over there, you know, so far away. So really encourage people to participate in that.
That's my experience exactly. I find myself clicking that refresh button about 50 times a day, waiting to see if there's another blog up there.
Uh-huh.
I'm not
sure.
Well, it's
fun because I know it from the other side, of course, because I've been over there. And so,
yes.
You know, it's just, you know, these long days and then, you know, trying to, you know, middle of the night, based usually, you know, they're typing away on the computer and loading pictures. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun over there, too, actually, because you look through all the pictures and you kind of get to, you really get what you're doing, you know, when you have to describe it to someone else.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's neat. It's a good experience to have.
Yes. I think I've heard you and Jen talk about that experience before of writing up those blogs at the end of the day. And as you were talking about that, I just had this image of you're there in Zambia, focused on whatever you're doing, and then you start writing the blog, and it's like your perspective grows again,
mm-hmm.
back to the rest of the Sangha here and around the world and all of that.
Oh, yeah. That's neat. Yeah. Well, it's true, because even though it looks really different, what's going on there in Africa, it's really no different than anything we're doing anywhere. It's no different, in a way, from the deepening practice training that we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
They're all different forms of the same thing.
Yes.
You know, they're all just ways that we, essentially Sherry really, has invented for people to participate and to give of themselves to something larger than the ego that lives inside each of our minds.
Yes. Yes. And I'm grateful tonight because I feel like I've deepened my practice as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's almost inevitable. If we can train ourselves to say yes in the way that Phil is talking about, then, you know, really that's all we have to take responsibility for. That's my experience anyway. You know, just say yes and the miracle happens, you know, one way or another.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's just like that's the doorway to everything that's possible through this practice that people have been talking about tonight.
Mm-hmm. Saying yes is the miracle, the doorway.
It's like the doorway.
Wonderful. Dave, it's been, as usual, a privilege and pleasure to have you on the air with us tonight, and I'm so grateful.
Well, I am too, and as usual, it's been a privilege and a pleasure for me also.
Great. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, thanks. Take care, Michael.
You too. Good night.
Good night.